Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my name's Nick.
Hello, I'm Woogie.
We are the Mouth of Manliness. This is a podcast all about mental health. But it's not just mental health. It's kind of about people's lives and about how they cope and how they manage in the world.
Yeah, and digging into the stories that make them who they are.
Yeah, so it's real life stories where we talk about things that people have been through and how they've managed and how they've coped and how they've come out the other side. So sometimes it's just me and Woggy here, but more often than not, we're talking to guests, sometimes more well-known guests, but more often than anything, it's just normal people who have been through interesting situations.
Yeah, and they've all got a lovely story to tell.
Yeah, so Mouth of Manliness, we are about mental health, but we're more about people and stories.
So, welcome to the Mouth.
The Mouth of Manliness. Welcome to the Mouth of Manliness. Yeah, we're back. It's quite nice, actually, because I haven't seen Warren for a few weeks, so it's quite nice to kind of be back in the pods, for want of a better word.
It's nice, mate. It's nice.
It's nice.
Getting sweaty with one another.
And it is. So,
it's like 26 degrees today.
Yeah, this will probably come out in quite a while, but yeah. Just know that we are sweating a lot and I refuse to wear shorts.
Yeah.
So I'm quite literally stuck to myself.
Oh, it's beautiful in here. Yeah. I have got shorts on because I just need an excuse and that's it, you know.
Yeah, it's one of my insecurities, shorts.
Oh, mate. It
really is. Anyway, welcome back. Season three. We are still on it. We're still in the middle of season three. All going well. I hope everyone else is doing all right.
Yes.
Lockdown is easing up. We're getting our lives back, funnily enough, which I think isn't as simple as it sounds.
No,
I think
not really.
People struggle getting their lives back a little bit.
Feels that, yeah, for sure.
But our guest today is Darren. It's Darren Smith, isn't it?
Sure is.
Darren Smith, welcome, Darren. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, cheers, Darren.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here and it's good to be on the show.
Amazing.
I've got my shorts on.
Yes.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Good lad. This is it.
Yeah. I've got a shirt on the top half.
Yeah.
Look like business attire, but
business
I've got shorts and flip flops on.
Barbecue at the bottom.
Upstairs for work, downstairs for parties.
There you go, mate. I'm always on that. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Good lad.
Yeah, thanks, Darren. It's really great. So, my friend Kirsty kind of put me in touch with you, and I was like, yes, definitely. Definitely want Darren on. And enough.
And my friend Kirsty mentioned to me about you guys.
Amazing.
And I said, yes, absolutely.
Brilliant.
Let's have a chat.
I've really noticed that the mental health world community is quite small.
Right.
Everyone kind of knows each other or knows of each other a little bit. It's quite nice.
Mm.
The people who kind of talk about it, you know, we all kind of get to know one another. I like that. So, Darren, you are part of Andy's Man Club?
Yeah, so I facilitate the Southend group of Andy's Man Club. It's the very first and his man club group in Essex.
Yeah.
And here right. comes the dog to say hello.
Hello, hello. That's all right. All good.
So it's the first group in Essex. And we've just celebrated our first month. We've been running for a month. Mm. And we've had 40 men through the door.
Have you really?
Wow, that's amazing.
So I'm averaging 10, or we're averaging 10 a meeting. A couple of guys have been to every meeting. Newcomers are coming as well. And it's just a great format for fellas to come along on a Monday night and have a chat and talk about how they're feeling.
Yeah. Massively important. So fantastic, that.
Before, when I was kind of looking into it a little bit, and
it's all right.
Don't worry, I love dogs. It's my dog's birthday today.
Can you bear with me a second?
Yep. Yeah, go on. Yep. Yeah, you're right. Don't worry. Where are we? I'm going to make a note. What I'll do, logic. Let me turn. I was going to have to sync up with the audio. Do you know what? I'll see it.
Just pause it.
Well, no, it's fine because I'll have to sync it to the other thing to cut that out anyway. And that, there'll be a dry on the Zoom recording anyway. So I'm overthinking. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, boys.
That's all right. Don't worry.
Not a problem, man. Not a problem. Let me see.
So he's opened the door.
Best trick ever. Yeah.
So I was looking into Andy's Man Club. I had heard of Andy's Man Club, but I initially thought it was like a Facebook group, but it's so much more than that. And it's like every Monday there's loads of them across the country, and I love the idea that it's all like the same day every week.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, so you can really get into a pattern, and like it's easy to remember.
Mm.
Yeah, Monday night, 7 till 9, wherever you are in the country, you can find an Andy's Man Club. They've just opened their 50th group.
Wow.
Which, when you think, so it started in 2016. A young guy took his life at the age of 23, and his brother-in-law, Luke, felt that something needed to be done in Halifax. That was where they were based. And he kind of put on a coffee morning. He thought it was going to be kind of a bit of a one-off.
Yeah.
And put a coffee morning together in Halifax. And that was where it started. So Andy's Man Club started out with kind of a few guys turning up for a coffee.
Right.
And then it kind of got bigger and bigger, and it was put together by Luke and Andy's mum, and they said they were going to set out, and in 5 years they hoped to have 10 groups.
Yeah.
So they're just about to celebrate their fifth birthday, and they've got 50 groups around the UK.
Fantastic, isn't it?
It just goes to show, though, doesn't it, that it's needed. I mean,
yeah,
I'm quite obsessed with Fight Club. And but you know, Fight Club is all about masculinity.
Yeah,
yes,
and it's not about the fight; it's about men being able to get together and not feel judged more than anything else.
Yeah,
that's it.
And yeah. Obviously, I kind of put them in a similar bracket, although obviously very different. So how did you end up setting one up in Southend then?
So. And we'll talk about my story, but I got discharged from hospital, having a very dark period in my life. And I came out and I knew that I was going to have therapy, professional therapy, but I wanted to do something myself. I wanted to go to a group, whether it was male and female, whatever it was. I wanted to talk with people who had gone through similar things or gone through the same issues, and I couldn't find anything locally. I'm based kind of Chelmsford way, and I looked Chelmsford, I've got friends in Leonsea, so I looked Southend, and there was nothing. There's quite a lot for older people, for older men, you know, which is all based around bereavement and stuff like that, which is great. And look, I've got a full head of grey hair, but I'm not ready for a man shed yet. You know, I'm not ready for, woodwork and metalwork. So I started looking, and I use Twitter. It's kind of my only real kind of social media platform. And I just see a tweet, and it's Man Club. You know, probably similar as you thought, it was just a Facebook group.
Yeah.
So I kind of done a little bit of research, and because of lockdown, they'd gone virtual.
Right.
And as you said, Monday night. So I think I thought about it probably two Mondays, maybe. Might even been three Mondays before I kind of went, right, I'm going to get on it and attend the session. And I attended, and it's kind of led from there. Within a few weeks, I realized it was helping me, and I realized I wanted to get involved. So I started facilitating online groups myself. So within kind of 6 to 8 weeks of attending myself, I started facilitating a group, and that was a different buzz altogether.
Yeah.
You know, talking to guys around kind of the South, because it was kind of a bit geographical. There were some guys in London, and you're just talking. They've got a really great, simple structure, and the meetings are based around 5 questions. Every week, questions 1, 2, and 3 stay the same, and questions 4 and 5 change every week.
Right.
But every group has the same questions, 4 and 5.
Right.
So you kind of, so I'll talk you through, you know,
I'd love to learn about it.
It kind of makes me, like, I say it all the time, but I often, like, put the way I manage my mental health is kind of, is quite, in many ways, the way I've managed over the last few years is similar to, like, the recovery model of AA.
Yeah.
I've often thought, like, it would be good to have, like, an AA for people who are struggling with their mental health, particularly men. And then when you say that, I'm like,
It sounds exactly what needed.
What's really cool is it's really nice to know that a lot of thought's gone into that. It's not just, because the thing is, if you just sit down and go, right, someone talk.
Yeah, it does.
Like, no one talks.
No.
Absolutely. And I kind of explain it to friends and stuff. And you kind of say, look, if we went out or you meet up with a friend, you go, how you doing?
Yeah.
And they'll go, I'm all right.
Yeah.
Firstly, no one really turns around and says, I'm struggling.
Mm.
But even if you did, they don't ask you the second question and say, what's wrong?
Yeah.
Take us through it,
Darren. So you get there on a Monday and you basically do a quick round of saying, what's your name and what's a positive reason? Give me a positive reason why you're here. And that just starts the ball rolling, because the fact that guys have come through the door is a huge positive. And we have a couple of guys, so there's a couple of my mates that helped me set it up. So I'm the lead facilitator, and I've got someone who's a co-facilitator. So with the questions, I always answer first. My co-facilitator will answer second. So no one in the group is the first one to answer, which also really helps and gets conversation.
Of course.
So the first question is, how's your week? How's your week been? That's it.
Yeah.
And you'll be surprised. You'll get guys kind of turn up. We had a guy's, look, the first time, I don't think I want to talk, but I just sit and listen. And that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And you say, well, how's your week? You go, how's my week?
Where
shall I start?
And
they just start talking. So you go around the table, around the chairs, and we sit in a circle, very similar to AA.
Yeah.
And the second question is, give me a positive from your week. So they may have been having a bad week, and they may have told us how bad their week is, but we want to find out if there's a little positive in there, just so they're not continuing on a kind of negative process with their discussion. And then number 3 is really, it's the big one. It's the middle of the 5 questions, and it's what is there anything, or what do you want to get off your chest? Is there anything you want to get off your chest tonight? And that's their opportunity to open up.
Mm.
And I've opened up on question three and bawled my eyes out.
Yeah.
And we've had that. And you know what? I think the opportunity to be able to cry is such a powerful thing to be able to do.
Mm.
Especially in front of other men, and especially in front of men you don't know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there's this kind of collective empathy in the room. And I'm going kind of quite...
Yeah.
Yeah, I am as well. Jittery as I'm talking
about it, because it's been like that, and it's like that online as well. You'd be surprised of, you know, some of the guys say they like the online because they're kind of behind the screen and they haven't got to see people physically, and they're opening up, telling you all sorts and their struggles. Mm. And there's also guys that like the face-to-face. You know, they've struggled during lockdowns talking to people on a laptop or a computer.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
And they want that personal interaction. So after the guys have kind of had their big open up and their big shares, we tend to have a break. And there's now, with lockdown rules changing, we have what they call brew station. So there's tea, coffees, water, biscuits.
Yeah.
And that also works as a great kind of barrier breaker when people walk in.
Yeah.
Because people do mill about outside. And the third role that we have within the kind of the team is it's called the sweeper. And that person is outside keeping an eye for cars or people that are walking up that haven't walked in.
Yeah.
And that's that arm around the shoulder, hence the sweeper mode, because they're going to go down and talk to someone. So, are you here for Andy's Man Club?
Mm.
And go, yeah, not so sure if I want to come in. Listen. Yeah. Come in with me. I'll get you a brew, and we go from there.
Mm.
So you mentioned that there's been thought. There's so much thought gone into it, but when you talk about it, it's so basic.
Yeah,
of course it is.
All the good things are basic.
They are, yeah, exactly.
But the thing that kind of occurs to me is that for someone to actually show up, to actually come there. Like, that's a massive thing in itself. To kind of go, like, I'm prepared to, you know, firstly, just to get through the door, and it's almost like, as a man, admitting that you've got a problem is really difficult.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I imagine once people are through the door and they see someone else being vulnerable, like, it's really hard for men to be vulnerable.
Mm.
And then the power of being vulnerable in front of other men who are being vulnerable, it's like,
yeah,
that's a fucking revolution.
Yeah,
man.
That's amazing. It is, yeah.
It's not allowed, is it?
No.
It's that unwritten rule that we all abide by.
Yeah.
We can't show our weaknesses, right?
I think as well, like with within your own friend groups, like I've definitely got friends that I can sit and have dinner with and go, mate, I've got to tell you all this. And then I've got other friends that the minute you go out, their reaction is a bit, oh fuck, because I don't want to talk about what I'm going through. So, you know, like the simple question of this about a relationship, I'll just fuck her off and blah 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 blah. It's like, but that's not what I'm saying. And then you sort of go, okay, so, and they don't want to address what's going on with them, because then you fit that there's that sort of mutual empathy thing. And I'm a sort of person that will just gab her off and be like, look, listen, this is, I need you, mate. Do you know what I mean? And I am like that, fortunately, and I have got good friends like that. But it is so interesting of like just the male condition of like of opening up, and it is a bit stiff upper lip. It is a bit, because some people, I guess, were sort of brought up in a manner that it just weren't allowed, as you said. You know,
that's it.
I mean, like, have you been to an AA meeting ever? Have you gone into one?
No, I haven't. No.
So I have, and I did that. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not, but at one point I know I was using alcohol for a very different way. It was just to fucking get something out of my head. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Dan, have you been in one? Have you been in an AA meeting before?
I haven't, but a friend of mine has, and he's now helping me with Andy's Man Club. So he's given me a little bit of an understanding of how they work.
So so when I went into it, and I went to a couple with like with a good friend of mine as well, because we were both like, every time we're getting messed up, like it's just going to a dark place, and I don't understand why. And my relationship was falling apart, like I had a baby on the way, all sorts of stuff, and that was ending, and it was just like, right, I need to figure what my relationship with alcohol is. And then when I sat there, it was very much like of a welcoming situation. It's like, as you were speaking, I was visualising what I did. Yeah. I was outside, and I was like, fucking hell, man, I don't know about this, because like, if I've got to admit anything, and I feel bad. The difference was, when I got into there, I felt that my sharing situation, I was up for it, to be honest, but after hearing everybody else, I was like, ah, this is actually, I haven't got the problems you've got.
Yes.
This isn't me locking myself away and destroying my body for 2 days because I can't not drink. Because I'm being destructive, and I need, that's more of a mental health problem than it is an addiction problem. Because I was taking drugs, doing all sorts
very
of shit.
They are, of course.
But I was doing it for hard escapism.
Yeah.
And therefore, then the come down situations of that were pushing me into a real dark place, you know. But still, like, I can still have a beer and be like, cool, gonna go home now, and I'm not gonna go and smash a bottle of vodka or whatever, and that. But the acceptance of it and the point of it, which is why it is so clearly like a good positive thing to be around other people when there's a common denominator that's much more common, actually. And alcoholism is very common, but that the common denominator of us as men needing to have someone that ain't going to go pull your socks up.
Yeah.
It's not just about pulling your socks up. It's about relatability and having a conversation going, fucking hell, I thought the same yesterday.
Yeah.
And, like, and then you start to get shivers and you start to get a bit excited and you're like, fuck, all right, so this is for me then, you know.
So I never really, like, I've had mental health problems. I'm 45. I've had mental health problems for 35 years. And I've got friends I've known, like, most of my life. And it wasn't until I did the podcast that they were like, oh, I didn't realise. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, cool. You know, I was clearly trying to kill myself in front of everyone all the time.
Yep.
And even now, I've got friends who are like, you know, you ain't really got any problems, have you? I was like, well, I've got a couple of diagnoses that would argue that.
Mm.
Yeah.
For me, the big part of getting better was the being able to say it and not be ashamed, because the shame is one of the biggest thing. So that's why I think what you're talking about is so important, because it's taking that shame out of it. If you're like, if there's another man in the room and they're going through not the same, but they're able to kind of like be emotional in front of you, then suddenly the shame, it's like shame starts to go away, and then you can start getting better.
Yeah, and I think the whole, when, and you've both just said it, when you hear or see someone in the room has got a similar or the same issue, it makes you feel better at that moment.
Yeah.
Because you're not on your own.
That's it.
So many people say that they're worried that they're going to get sectioned or something, or like they genuinely think, well, something bad's going to happen if I open up about my mental health. And I'm like, it's really unlikely that anything serious is going to happen. You know, it does happen, but it's really unlikely. So what's the other questions, Darren?
We have a break, we have a brew. Well, we come back, and as I said, 4 and 5 change every week, and they're a little bit more thought-provoking. They might be a little bit more humorous. So, excuse me, question 4 could be something like, when was the last time you had a proper belly laugh? And you're thinking, I can see you on the screen. You're both thinking, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
I'm scanning. I remember an occasion, but it weren't recent.
Yeah.
So and that question doesn't matter how recent.
No, of course.
We're talking about when was you,
good
when
time,
did you, and you're thinking about that moment, right?
Yeah, of course.
Question 4 could be, when was the last time you read a book, or what's your favourite book?
Gets you thinking. Yeah, I'd like that question.
Another example, and this one created so much debate and talk. If you could go back in history to any moment in time, where would you go to? So with that, you had guys thinking of or giving sporting events.
Yeah.
And then somebody else go, oh, I forgot about that. You had people talking about music events where people have died. So, you know, people saying Elvis, Hendrix.
Yeah, yeah.
The Beatles. And again, you got guys going, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
And then you had some guys saying, I'd go back to the start of the First World War because I want to see what was going on.
Yeah.
And just that question, you've got, and all of a sudden, you've got people talking about something other than their mental health.
It has a bit of a, like, even like when, what was the last good thing, last positive?
That seems,
you know, I think, oh, if I was to do it, I'd want to go in hard and deep. But actually, what you're saying is really, really good because it's like, it, as you said, it takes you out of your head for a bit. We have an outpour, but then we start thinking about nicer things and we start thinking about different things and we all have a bit of a chat. And suddenly you're like, actually, it's not all about you and your mental health for a change. No.
That's it.
That's lovely, isn't it?
And then question five is the quick fire round, and that would be, what's your favourite film?
Yeah, yeah.
If you could only eat one item of food forever, what would it be?
Pizza.
And the best one, and again, this was online at the start of the year, what's your favourite biscuit?
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Just like real, just kind of like just simple stuff.
Darren, what is your favourite biscuit?
Yeah, what is your favourite biscuit?
Well, it'll have to be the chocolate digestive.
It's a banger, mate. I'm a fan of the chocolate hobnob, though.
Yeah, I am as well.
It's a hard digestive.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I like making them go soggy in my mouth, but then it feels a little bit like breakfast. And I don't like breakfast.
Sounds like some pinky shit you got going on with that biscuit.
Soggy biscuit.
You had guys disagreeing with each other.
Proper having Barneys. Yeah, wicked. Of course you did.
But it's
an important part of life.
It's the flip on it, isn't it? It turns it around. So that it means that at the end of it, everyone's had a bit of a laugh and a joke. And then you go away and you've had a positive experience.
Yeah.
It's not just about the heaviness. You have a chance to offload.
Mm.
But then you have a positive experience and you're like, actually, it's a bit of a laugh. You know, I'll go back next week.
Yeah.
And it's clever, isn't it? It's absolutely right there, Nick. I think if it was all about pouring your heart out, there'd be instances where you'd potentially be leaving in the same sort of mindset as you arrived.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I like to think, you know, in the 4 weeks we've been at Southend, everybody that's entered there has left in a better place than they arrived.
Yeah, good.
I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that it's going to cure people. I explain it as it's one of our tools that we have in our mental health toolbox.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's good.
And you wouldn't go and do a piece of DIY with just one tool. You've got multiple tools, and attending an Andy's Man Club group is one of those tools.
Mm.
But you know that tool gets used every Monday night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was saying about like the regularity of it.
I've had
therapy, you can hang on. I can hang on until my next therapy. You know, I can hold it together until next week, whatever it is. Keep it together till then.
Mm.
So the idea of that regularity is really important, which I really liked about it. So how did you go about setting it up then? Did you just get in touch with...
Yeah, I just got in touch with the guys at Halifax, so the kind of bases at Halifax, and a lot of the groups are up north.
I noticed that.
Their growth is really, again, so simple. It's just through organic growth. So if there's kind of a couple of guys that may be traveling a little bit further than the rest of the guys, once they've been, you know, attending for 4 or 5 weeks and they go through a little bit of facilitator training, they can then open up their own group. So let's just say, you know, you two guys are traveling 20 minutes to come and attend Southend. You're coming in from Chelmsford. And after 5-6 weeks, you say, do you know what, boys? I think I can open up our own group in Chelmsford. Well, then you'll get support from the guys at Halifax, giving you kind of pointers of who to contact for a venue and who to talk to. And they then help you set up your own group.
Yeah, and they give you training on how to do it.
That's the other thing.
It's organised. That's what I was really impressed by when I was looking into it. It's so much more. It's really organised, and I also like the pictures of like the trustees. Like they're funny pictures, and I think that is what often. That's why like I always, when people ask about a podcast, they're like, oh God. That all sounds a bit miserable, and it's like, no, it's not. Most of the time, we have quite a laugh.
Oh, we like, do.
Yeah, it gets heavy sometimes, but it's also a laugh. And the idea is that it's not, you know, if it was all really heavy, then people wouldn't go.
Do you know what's interesting? I was thinking when you were talking about sort of the way it's structured and stuff. I think the nice thing for me immediately, and again, linking it back to meeting your mates in the pub, the thing with a pub is that you can get. You get there with a bit of a thing and your mates, and if you're feeling like you can have a few beers and forget it, great. The problem is you're drinking.
Yeah.
And then when you finish and you go home, because of the nature of alcohol and anything else, you feel fucking miles worse. Yeah. And what that does, it just, you then wake up and then the problem resonates and you're probably more anxious than you was, and it's why it's not, although it's like, you know, have a chat with your mate in the pub sort of thing, this is the better solution.
It is,
because it doesn't involve, and there's nothing wrong with going to have a few beers and getting absolutely battered with your mates, don't get me wrong, but as long as you're going at that with the intention of smiling and laughter, and I've been mad guilty of doing exactly that, if I'm honest. So like, this is the solution to that. This is the, you know, and it's not, it's linked, as you said, it's linked to the way therapy would help you deal with things you've got on your mind, but on a much more like user level together.
Yeah.
And that's that collaborative nature for me is exactly what that's about. I love it.
It's great. I like the idea of it not 100%. Being in a pub.
And that's the thing I should have mentioned at the beginning, you know, all the people that run the groups, facilitate the groups, have all been users of the group. So there's no professionally trained people.
Yeah. No, right, it's people.
You know, it's the peer-to-peer men's talking group.
Yeah,
which is great.
And again, it's interesting because some people go to therapy and go, how can that therapist who's a 25-year-old lady have any idea how a 45-year-old divorcee with 3 kids, how can she relate to me?
Yeah.
And there's an element of truth in that.
Yeah, there is.
We discussed that on a podcast recently.
But that professional therapist has obviously gone through all the relevant training and all the relevant qualifications to understand. But there are a big percentage of blokes that feel that way.
Right? Yeah.
And would prefer to talk to fellas sitting in a room who they don't think are judging them.
Yeah.
Or have an understanding of them.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why it works. It's peer-to-peer. It's blokes that are, you know, gone through their storms, come out the other side, not saying they've completely finished with the storms, but they're able to talk about other people's storm.
I think the peer-to-peer thing, like I do work with my black dog, and that's peer-to-peer, and like Kirsty's, Reach Out for Mental Health is
very much
peer to peer, and I know from work, I work in mental health, and I know a lot of people in mental health, they don't like that because I think more often than not it belittles their qualifications. And they're like, oh, but you know, what happens if there's a problem? And it's like, well, then you just support someone.
Yeah.
Correct.
You know, you just support them.
Correct.
You show them.
You support them and you make that phone call to the relevant people, right?
Yeah, exactly. You've given them an opportunity to speak. That is the most important thing, speaking. So, Yeah, do you find, do you have like people kind of hanging around at the end and they want to talk more? Do you get that kind of thing?
We've been running over for the since we started.
Of course you have.
That's what I thought.
Question three at 11:30.
Yeah. we finished between 9:30, 9:00. We're meant to be done by 9:00. But I see it as, you know, if someone starts talking, I'm not going to stop them because that could be the start of them being able to talk about their issues. So I let them talk, and so far most guys have kind of got to a natural point and we can move on. But question one takes a lot longer than it should do. But again, we end up having a bit of a laugh about it and a smile. And because guys are coming back, they kind of get involved a little bit and they say, well, how long are we going to be on first questions tonight? You know?
Yeah, right.
So we haven't had that, and we're grateful. I want to give them a plug. Southend United have loaned us the room. They give us the room free of charge.
Amazing.
And they've helped us with some of our PR. You know, there's some guys that are attending that have come from the Southend United media streams that they've seen on us. So, you know, that's amazing. Fantastic. And I feel for the caretaker because he's waiting for us to finish, you know.
He should take part. Do you know what I mean? Get him in there.
I think one of them wants to.
Oh, really? That's good though, isn't it? How amazing is that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's really good.
I love it. I'm almost. It's quite a long way from me.
Yeah, well, I bow down to me and I drive us. I'm up for it. I've got to
You two should come along. And see it for itself. And I'll keep saying it. It's so simple. And you then, how has this not started before 2016? Why did it take someone's brother-in-law to come up with this idea in Halifax? You know.
Yeah.
But it's quite special. It's what I really liked about it though was that they've really flipped like Andy's story. You know, it's a tragic story, and they've flipped it and they've made it into something really special and beautiful.
It's a lovely thing.
And I was watching something today about like a singer, Lane Staley, when he died, and they turned that into helping people with recovery, you know. And that's the story, not that someone else has died. And that's really special. That's a really special thing. So, right, Darren, I need to know about you. So how did you get to the point when? So, what was going on for you? How did you end up in that position?
So, I've suffered with my mental health about 11 years.
Right.
I was aware of it. So, just a bit of background. I got into finance and banking at a very, very young age. At 17 years of age, I got into the city, and I did nearly 20 years in the city. Did quite well, did a lot of things to excess, you do.
Yeah, I've got friends who work in this.
You know, and look, it was great, and I was very lucky, and I got to work outside of the UK, and I travelled a lot, and I spent a number of years working abroad. My marriage had failed and I went abroad and I had a son, and I came back and I had a kind of a lot of life things all happen at one time. So I kind of came back to the UK. I had a promotion, I had a big salary, I was trying to rebuild my kind of relationship with my son, and the divorce was going through, and I had a breakdown. I just one day on the way to the office just couldn't physically get into the office, and obviously this had been building for a long time, and I hadn't told a soul. I had a partner at the time, she's been my angel, my rock, my godsend. Yeah. I didn't tell her at the beginning. And I just thought it was work. I just thought it was stress with work.
Yep.
And I said, right, it's work. It's this banking industry. I've been doing it a long time. And maybe I've just come to that point. So I just went, right, I'm leaving banking. I'll leave it. And that'll fix me. Yeah. Didn't do any kind of therapy. Didn't really. Mm. I went to the doctors, but I didn't really go to the doctors.
Yeah,
I think men listening to this will relate to that.
Yeah, you gotta go. Commit. It's like, yeah, I ain't feeling all that good, but I'm all right.
That's it.
Yeah. Had a chat and that, I'm fine. So don't worry about
it. Give me medication, but I probably won't take it.
No. Nah. Yeah. But I will go to the pub and get proper on it. That's and it. It'll be fucking fine. Yeah, mate, I've been there. Yeah, I know. I know exactly that. Yeah.
This is it. When you walk through that door at the doctor's, you're fixed.
Yeah, you know.
So, I've now looking back was I didn't fix it, it wasn't work. It was everything that was going on at that time. Mm. And I was very quick to blame work. So I then had some time out and did some other bits and pieces, but I kept looking back. And this was the start of kind of the real dark. I kept going back to, look what I had. I had this great job. I had this great salary. I had all the material trappings. And I kept beating myself up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I got into another industry and I just went hell for leather. I got back up to another point where I was going, right, here we go again. We're doing all right. You know, we've got a nice car and nice wages. But I started to feel the darkness come again.
Yeah.
And so again, I blame work.
Yeah.
I went, right, time to leave, get another job.
You know what, I've been doing that recently. You know, like you think, like a small thing, oh, I'll change my job and everything will be better.
Yeah.
But the issue's still there. Like, it's still there. It's still, like, it hasn't actually gone anywhere.
So just a slightly different issue, in a way.
No, the issue's still pretty much the same.
Oh, right, okay.
But it's like, you think something's going to solve it and then it doesn't. And then it's like, fuck.
It's still there.
Yeah.
Fuck. What am I going to do?
So I kind of, in this period, I kind of had some lulls. I'd had a bit of therapy and very similar to the doctor, you kind of go and have a bit of therapy, but you don't really open up. And that was kind of, I then realised, and again, I talk about it's an onion, right? Mental health. My mental health has been an onion. And I might have kind of had a chat with a therapist and maybe taken one or two layers of that onion off, but that problem is still in the middle of that onion.
Yeah.
And when you say, yeah, I'm all right, when you're not, all you're doing is putting layers upon layers on top of that onion.
And everyone does that. Everyone does that.
Yeah,
right?
It takes you ages to get there.
And like a real onion, some layers come off very easily.
Yeah.
Some layers don't come off, they rip.
Mm.
Right? And you thought, oh, that's come off. Oh, no, it hasn't.
Mm.
And we then got into lockdown and I felt a little bit better because everyone was off. I wasn't working at this point.
You didn't need to feel good.
And I thought, you know what? This is all right. Everyone's off.
Yeah.
All you're doing is hiding the root cause.
So this is very recent then, mate.
Yeah. And it got to a point, so we kind of went back to, or people went back kind of end of last year.
Mm.
And I've been putting so many layers on top of my onion and I just kept on beating myself up and going back to this. But I've had to walk away from two very good positions in my professional life. You know, what the fuck am I doing? You know, I was good at something, you know, and now I'm not. And the wife's working from home and she's supporting us. And that then fuels that worthlessness.
Yeah, that ego is going like, your shit.
That's it. Mm. And the more you then say, no, don't listen to that ego. Don't listen to that.
Yeah.
You listen to it more.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I weren't sleeping. My biggest issue was going to bed and put my head on that pillow, and that ego and all those kind of, I say voices, but I've not had voice, but all of that negativity.
Yeah, that internal talk.
Just batters you.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you're kind of then looking at the clock at 4 o'clock in the morning, you're going, I am absolutely shattered.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I have beaten myself to a pulp.
Yeah, and it just fucks you up, doesn't it?
Yeah, right. Mm. And you nick a couple of hours sleep, and then you put a brave face on.
Yeah.
You didn't sleep much last night. Nah, I don't know what it was. Tossed and turned. Bit hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're all right. Yeah, I'm fine. You go to have a drink.
Yeah.
Makes you feel better for what? 30 seconds? A minute?
Yeah.
And then it got to a point, boys, in October where I went out to commit suicide.
You did.
I've been planning it for weeks in my head. I went to the local DIY shop and I bought a rope.
Right.
And looking back, obviously I can kind of smile at it now. I spent half hour looking at ropes.
Right. Yeah, you wanted to do it well.
To make sure, that's it.
Yeah.
To make sure
that
I had the right one.
Yeah.
But I remember having a conversation with myself thinking, oh, that one's a bit expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to I'm tucking it in.
Spent too much money.
Yeah.
But, you know, and looking back, I needed help.
Yeah, it's not well, mate. Yeah.
Darren, you're not on your own.
No,
but
I've been
there so many times.
You know, and I kind of went out on a Friday and I was going to do it and I didn't, and I kind of drove around and I went to a couple of parks, and because the weather was okay, there was just loads of people around. I was walking around with this rope in me kind of jacket, it was boiling hot, and I'm trying to find kind of a tree. And then I came back home and kind of, you're right, I'm fine. And obviously,
you're and then it comes to the Monday and I just, unwell.
Yeah, I just screamed at the wife and said, right, that's it. I'm going out and I'm not coming back. I love you, but I'm off. See you later.
Yeah.
And off I went. And I drove around and again, trying to find kind of quiet places. And I don't know, you kind of go, yeah, I'm definitely going to do it. And then maybe not. But I didn't know where I was. And luckily, the police found me. Stacey had phoned the police. And with all their AMPR systems and all the ways that they can track you, they found me. And I was sitting in my car with the rope around my neck.
Mm.
And I looked at this copper and I just thought, fuck it.
Mm.
I ain't done it.
Yeah.
So they kind of brought me back home, and then my mood changed, because then the coppers are trying to say, look, you'll be all right. And I know they were trying to say the right things. And
they're not trained for that.
And then, they're not trained. You're right.
No, they're
not trained. And one of them said, you know, just think, you know, this is the worst. You're at the bottom now. It's all going to be up. I weren't allowed into the house. My parents and Stacey's parents, because obviously she was in bits, they were in the house.
Oh, you weren't allowed to go back into the house?
Wasn't allowed to go back in the house because they sectioned me.
Right. They did. Did they really?
Because I had the rope around my neck. They sectioned me.
I'm quite surprised by that. Were you... Sorry, carry on.
No, ask away, because I'm still a little bit unsure, but it was a blessing in disguise. When you actually talk about it, it was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, because you start to realise how bad it
had that be. Not happened, I wouldn't have then been taken to hospital. I wouldn't have then sat in the hospital waiting to be assessed by 3 national health psychiatrists.
Yeah.
And at that point, I had this moment where I said, right, I've got to tell these 3 absolutely everything.
Mm.
And I did.
Yeah.
And I kind of went, look, I know I need help, and I know I want to go to hospital, but can I go home? And I'll kind of go tomorrow. And they went, nah.
Nah.
You're going straight away.
Yeah.
The section is staying where we're, whatever it is they say about that, where we're enforcing that, and we're taking you straight to Harlow Mental Hospital.
Are you in Harlow? How long were you there for?
4 days.
Mm. That's and a bit longer. That's a long.
No, I luckily I say I got out. It wasn't a great place for me.
There's a bit of realisation though, isn't there? Like when that happens, and then you're around some people who are so very afflicted.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, hold on. I think I might be a bit better than that.
You've hit the nail straight on the head, Nick. And this is kind of what I now talk about when I kind of do my Andy's Man Cup or I talk to people. Mental health is such a big pull.
Yeah.
If you break your leg, you go to one ward and they fix your leg with a cast.
Yeah.
Right? If you've got a mental health issue, you're in this big pot that incorporates schizophrenia at every level, bipolar at every level, ADHD at every level, PTSD at every level. And you're absolutely right, Nick. I walked into that reception and went, I don't think I'm that well, I'm not that as well as these guys. I don't think I'm that bad. Especially when you're seeing a guy walking backwards around the waiting room.
Yeah, right.
And you're listening to the guys that are screaming and shouting, and you know, and I have now feel so sorry for those guys because they've got nowhere else to go.
You have to kind of go through it to be able to recognise it. Have you found that, like, since you've been in that situation, like, you really notice it in people, and your empathy just goes up so much more?
You're like, hugely.
Hold on, that person might not be, you know, everyone else is like, oh, there's the piss bloke we always see around the shops. And you're like, no, that's the unwell bloke.
That's right. Yeah.
And you're like, I've been unwell as well.
Yeah.
Fuck.
But for me, that period in the NHS hospital was horrible. Yeah. I've not spent too long in a prison cell, but it felt like a prison cell.
Yeah.
I didn't come out of my room for 4 days. So the only time I got put in my room and I left that room when I got transferred to the Priory, because unfortunately my wife has private healthcare.
Right.
Yeah.
And it took her 4 days to get everything, because I've been sectioned, it took her 4 days.
All right.
And I got transferred, and you know, that was the start of my recovery. But when I went to the Priory, it was like walking into the Savoy Hotel.
I know. The thing is,
because of what I'd been from, right? Yeah, what I'd seen.
Sectioning, so, like, people don't always understand the sectioning. If you get sectioned, and it is quite hard to get sectioned, you have to be a real risk to yourself or others. And two psychiatrists have to sign off on the section.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But if you get sectioned, it kind of, like, you could be continuously sectioned. Like, it is kind of like getting locked up. And if you're in, like the NHS section, it's not going to be very nice. But if you go to the Priory, which is basically like a private section in many ways. Like I've known quite a few people who've been to the Priory, and it's quite famous, isn't it? But there's lots of Priories.
There's lots of them. There's lots of them. But although it's a nicer environment, you've still got the same issues.
Still got to do the work.
Yeah, of course.
You've still got to do the work. You know, there's still people in there that are struggling a lot more than what I was. You know, there was people in there that were schizophrenics.
Mm.
But by whatever means, they're in that hospital, not the NHS hospital.
It's another shame thing, though, isn't it? You know, like I was saying earlier about shame. And then you go into a situation like that, and then you feel shameful that you're not as bad as someone else.
Yep.
And it's like, no, we're all ill.
Yep.
So I was saying earlier, like, when you were going around looking for somewhere to kill yourself, like, you were incredibly unwell.
Mm.
Yes.
And unwell is unwell.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter, you know, you're unwell to someone else's unwell, doesn't make any difference. You were unwell and you needed help.
Yeah.
And that was it. Like, everything else doesn't really matter at that point. And it's really, as much as it's a horrible experience, like, that was what needed to happen.
Mm.
I totally agree with you, Nick. I totally agree. And you know, at that moment, and in that moment, I didn't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
And that was because I felt everyone that I care about and that care about me would be better off without me being around because of the whole worthlessness and like you've mentioned already, you know, your ego, being a man and not being able to provide, not being a great father, not being a great son, not being a great brother, all of that, you know?
Changes your stance on it, doesn't it? You know, like if you say to someone, "Oh, I'm suicidal," they instantly they recoil and they're frightened, or they think, or they look at you badly, and they're like, "Well, you've got children. How could you possibly ever contemplate something?" And I'm like I'm suicidal regularly. You know, like that is my default setting. Like, I go there all the time, and like, I can't really help that. But I get better at it. But it's like that's why I think, you know, like these conversations, they need to be had.
Yeah,
it's like sometimes really we fucking get suicidal.
Mm.
Yeah, you know,
it's not a weakness. It's not a bad. It's not because we're bad. It's because we're not well.
Mm. It's something that it's, I mean, like,
and it is an illness.
Yeah, and, it is.
And,
yeah,
you know, I started therapy very quickly when I went into the Priory, and I wasn't willing to accept it was an illness. I wasn't willing to own the illness.
Mm.
You know, I was still adamant that I was a failure. So.
I
kind of gone full circle in the space of kind of a week and a half.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'm in this hospital. I've been sectioned. I'm in this hospital. But I'm still a fucking failure.
Yeah.
You know? And now I'm in here. I'm in hospital because I'm a failure.
How big a failure I am. I'm in hospital.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what your brain does. Your brain goes, you are fucking shit.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And not then you're going through medication and again, I've kind of had medication and not taken it. You said that earlier on. You know,
yeah, me as well.
There's a lot of similarities here, Nick. Me and you.
Yeah. I've fucking done it all.
And then you're kind of having your medication and you don't know if it's working. And then you kind of have a slightly better day and you think, wow, medication's working. I'm all right. And then I had a big drop. I had a big, big drop. And a bit of a falling out with someone when we were doing some therapy. I said, look, you know, I've been struggling and I would regularly want to get a terminal disease because I felt that would be easier. And this guy disagreed with me. And I said, look, I feel how I feel. You feel how you feel. And there was times, and there are times when I'd rather have a terminal illness so I could just go and people would go, oh, that's a shame.
Shit, man.
I had this big falling out with him in the session and I then locked myself away for 2 days in my room. I didn't come out, I didn't talk to anybody. And the therapist, who I still see now, came in and just, you know, had a chat with me and she said, look, just forget about it. Forget about it.
Yeah, it kind of attacks, you know, everything, like when you're like that. Everything attacks you, And like, and you get all fucking out of joint, don't you? You get all angry, and you're like, and everything you think, everything you're thinking about, just reminds you how shit you are.
Mm.
And you're like, they've said that, and I know it's bullshit, but aren't I shit? And like, and then you're like, just confirm it to yourself.
Yeah,
Do you know what? It really resonates for me. Like, a lot of things have happened, but like certain people in my life trigger like very personal like things, and to my children and ex-partners and stuff like that, and
yeah,
people can say certain things, and it does that thing of like self-validation of like I'm shit yeah, at being a dad, I'm shit at loads of other stuff, and it's the fucking journey that I go on from having a message to then retaliating to that message, and then my brain starts going, you're fucking shit, and you've been shit before, and they all think you're still shit, and the kids think you're shit, and everyone thinks you're shit, and I sit there and it takes me like literally 2.5-3 hours to get out of that, or I go fucking full on like mental, like, and I don't, obviously not in like, I mean like aggressive and horrible and self-destructive and I stopped I stopped using sort of booze because of how that ended up making me feel, so I started sort of just going on fucking mega long walks and stuff, and just that actual physical teardown to come back and take deep breaths, and it's like, but it happens when someone else's nose is out of joint by something else, is what I come to realise, and then it flags exactly what you both just said. It's like I get that that immediate,
it
attacks the ego. That gets destroyed, and then I start to reminisce and resonate with all the stuff that was fucking horrible for me to go through, because like, I've had suicidal thoughts a lot over the last few years. I've had a lot of real dark days where I haven't left my bed, basically, and I've made excuses not to work, not to see people, not to talk to anybody. And I'm not that person, man. I natter, I love it. It's always been who I am. But when you can't get a hold of that, there's only so few options that you can actually talk about, and it's fucking, mate. Honestly, that pressure I felt on my chest.
That's
and
it's like, anxiety.
And that anxiety, that's the anxiety, huge,
isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
in the
that.
Chest.
And then the physical shuddering of like not knowing what to do with that energy at all. And it's either really hyper destructive, or like I want to get caught doing something, or I want to do something really horrible so that fucking I get gone. Do you know what I mean? Like that is how dark it's got for
so
me before therapy.
It's taken away from you.
Mm.
You exactly.
No matter what happens, something will happen. So fuck it. It's all right.
But that's
can't hurt anybody else anymore.
But that's
and
like,
it's that's mate. Honestly, that's I resonate
like
so hard with it.
About like
it's
the,
fucking
like
unreal.
The suicidal.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's
yeah.
Like,
exactly that.
And like.
Yeah, man.
And you know, you were saying about like wanting to be ill.
Mm.
Like my wife and my mother-in-law had very serious cancer, and there was a bit of me that was jealous.
Right.
Because it was like, why wasn't it me?
Right. Yeah.
Because like,
I don't want people to get the wrong idea.
Yeah, it's fucking mad.
You're right.
Yeah, fine.
It touches you though, doesn't it?
But it's just it's amazing how common and how like it actually is in us in every different way, you know, and it fucking takes you over, like
it's painful,
and it's very, very important that this stuff is sort of addressed. I think like it's so, you know what I mean, and not just with therapy, as I said, like with what you're doing, and
and you know, I don't want ill on anybody, you know, I don't want ill on anybody, but
no,
you know. Hands up, you know, I've had no moment where I want to have, you know, an illness. I wouldn't want anyone to get it, you know, anyone. But at that time, I want it.
Yeah.
Because it will make it, I don't know, easier, better.
Solve the problem.
Mm. And the reason we're all agreeing is because it's related to our mental health, and we're not allowed to talk about our mental health.
No.
So what's the turning point, Darren?
So... The big dip was a bit of a turning point, and my therapist called it the funk. You get the funk. And when you were explaining it, I'm going, gets the funk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think it's a bit of everything. And again, I talk about, you know, I don't think one thing will ever fix mental health. I think it's a hybrid. It's a mix of everything. So when medication got changed, I started really opening up and talking in the therapy. Mm. I started exercising that a little bit more. Yeah. And it got to a point where the insurance runs out. Mm. So you kind of go, well, I haven't got the money to pay for it, so I've got to be discharged. But I started getting a little bit narky with some other people thinking, oh, I wish they'd shut up. And I thought, well, I must be getting better. So I got discharged. And
How long were you in there for?
So six weeks.
Oh, quite some time.
Six weeks. And the first week, I was on cloud nine because I was just so happy to have come out of where I didn't want to be.
Mm.
And again, I'm not dissing the NHS
in any
shape or form. It just wasn't right for me.
Yeah.
So the first week I was like, whoa, you know, I was sitting in therapy. I was crying my eyes out thinking, well, that's all right. I'll be all right. And then I had realization that I was still ill. You know, I come off that crest of a wave. Then I had the big bunk, got discharged, came home, and that wasn't easy.
No.
That wasn't easy because I still didn't want to talk to anybody, still felt quite ashamed. I didn't want to talk to my mum and dad. Mm. But I stuck with it. And we got a dog during lockdown who's been the best therapist.
Because
he don't answer, don't tell me nothing.
No.
And nods when I ask him to nod.
He wanted to be on the podcast, though. Yeah. So, do you know what I mean? At least he said hello to us.
Yeah, my dog's
Franco, the Spanish water dog.
Bless
him.
So,
my dog saves my life every
so
day.
So I've been walking him, and I've been asked this before, what was the turning point? Do you know what? It was getting involved with Andy's Man Club. Mm. And I'm not saying that's the biggest reason. It's one of the reasons. And it's because I've been carried on taking my medication, seeing my professional therapist, opening up to my mates, opening up to my family, and then the Andy's Man Club. And on the back of that, you know, listening to other guys, like we said right at the start of the show, you know, hearing other people talk about their problems. That is helping me. When I told my therapist I was getting involved with Andy's Man Club, she went, please be careful.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be taking on. And that was some of my issues was, if I do something, I'm going to do it properly.
Hmm.
I'm going to go, I get involved 2 feet. Let's do it. If we're going to do it, let's do it properly.
Yeah.
And that was some of my problem with my social life. If we're going to go out, let's go out.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. And Mickey Flanagan, you know, if we go out, we go out, right?
Yeah.
So I have learned to kind of come back. But I have been diagnosed. I'm kind of a bit bipolar, which I relate to. And I'm kind of glad that I've got a bit of a diagnosis.
Mm.
Nick, you said you've kind of struggled for 35 years. Have you had kind of diagnosis that have helped or kind of resonated?
I still struggle. I've got two diagnoses. One is dysthymia, which is like constant depression, like always depressed. And like I could, like that one I can live with really. And then the other one is like borderline personality disorder.
Okay.
And then since I started working in mental health, I've realised that that is really the diagnosis you don't want to have, because services really struggle with it. And then I was thinking, I've got a borderline personality disorder, a little bit of a personality disorder, that's all right. And then I found out that it's not. The borderline is your borderline psychotic. And then I told my wife, and she was like, my wife's got a psychology degree, and she was like, yeah, I knew that.
Still loves you, though, so that's important.
But then I had this realisation that Yeah, sometimes I get psychotic. Like, not dangerous psychotic, but psychotic to the point that my thoughts, like my suicidal thoughts, kind of get a bit dangerous sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, reasonably regularly, if I'm honest. There isn't a cure for that. You just sit with it. Lately, that's been kicking me up the arse a bit. I struggle with that a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I don't like that diagnosis, but the more and more I've learnt about it, the more I see that it's quite true.
Yeah, but and you mentioned learning about, and I think that's what, you know, talking and podcasts like this and more information, just knowing that, you know, there are these illnesses, and that's, again, that was my acceptance that helped me get better. Now I've got an illness, and I'm probably going to always have that illness, but I've just got to work with it and deal with it and work around it, you know, and doing all of the little bits. So, you know, doing a little bit of mindfulness, listening to an app, you know. When they said to me, we're going to do some mindfulness, when I went into hospital, I went, what the fuck are you talking about?
It rings true, though, doesn't it?
But the problem is, when you're in an environment where mindfulness is going to the pub and spending a fair amount in a carsy, it's like, and that's just being brutally fucking honest here, that's the real issue, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So sitting on a chair and doing fuck all for a bit is actually a bit more productive, it turns out. Do you know what I mean? It's true, isn't it? Like,
it's very true.
It just
it's
is, isn't
very
it?
Like, true.
Yeah, and this is it. Like, it's just total honesty. You know, and, fucking hell.
So, you know, walking into a room and the lady's saying, right, I want you to sit down and get yourself comfortable, take your shoes off, and I'm going to talk to you, and you're going to go to a different place. Mm. And like you've just said, the only way I'm going to a different place...
This is it.
If you give me illegal drugs.
There you go.
I kind of did it, and there was one guy, he was only male therapist there, his name was Harry, and his voice was kind of like Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, great. Ooh, yeah, nice.
He'd do it on a Wednesday afternoon.
Mm.
And he'd just go, right, I'm going to do mindfulness. And you go, all right. And he'd do it from his head. The others read it.
Yeah.
And he'd take you, and I can't remember it. That's how good it was, and that's how far out and zoned out I went. But he'd start kind of walking down steps at the back of your mind. There's a little bit of light.
That's more than standard mindfulness. Is a bit more day-to-day. That's a bit more like meditation.
Yeah. They call it kind of mindfulness and relaxation.
Yeah. It helps, though.
Mm.
He'd do it for 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah. When I'd wake up, when I come back, I was high.
Yeah, I've had that experience.
Because you've literally got all of the negativity, all of the rubbish out of your head.
Mm.
And you kind of wake up, and it was as if you were buzzing. Mm. It was as if I was buzzing.
Yeah, I've had that many
times. And we'd all thank him. We'd go, thanks, Harry. We'd go, no, I didn't do it. It's you. You've done it.
Yeah.
You did it.
Mm.
You go, well, hold on, because the other lady, when she said, we don't feel like this. And I've stuck with it. So I now use the Calm app. I use it. I don't use it every day, but if I feel myself a little bit tetchy, that 10-minute, you know, switch off, sit down. You know, when in life do we get to kind of switch off properly? And I think, you know, those little bits really help.
My hypnotherapist, don't see him that much at the moment, but I did have like 2 years of hypnotherapy, and like Peter has been on a podcast, and he's always says, like, I'll take you to where, like, we should be, you know, like that's where we should be. We should be at that point, just life, is so fucking brutal that it takes you away.
Mm.
But, you know, I'm only really taking you to where you should be. I'm not doing anything special. I'm just calming you down and bringing you, centering you a bit. And it all sounds airy-fairy, but there's fucking something in it. Like, I still meditate. Like, I don't do it all the time, but, like, when I find myself, my wife notices when I'm not right, and she's like, go upstairs, turn the lights off, put headphones on, and I listen to, I listen to guided meditations.
I thought you were going to say Guided by Voices, then, the band.
Yeah, they're a good band.
They are a good band, sorry. Yeah, no.
It just slows me down. It slows me down, and then I start to kind of get to this realisation that my thoughts aren't helpful, and that I don't need to listen to my thoughts, and there's something in me that can, like, separate. And that's what meditation does. It helps you to separate from your thoughts. And it's hard to do. It's really hard to do, but it does work.
Yeah, definitely. I can agree. It definitely works.
Yeah, it does.
And I've got mates now that are kind of doing it, or they'll phone me and say, oh, I've been doing this mindfulness. Have you heard about it?
Yeah,
I've been trying to tell you about that for weeks, you
know?
So yeah, mindfulness. I think everyone should have a little go of mindfulness. Just give it a try.
Well, we're close to an hour and a half. Right. Yeah. Darren,
yes.
I want your best tips. Mindfulness, what else is the best? What's your next best tip?
Talk to someone that cares about you.
Beautiful.
Forget how you feel about talking to that person. Forget how they will feel about talking to you. Talk to someone that cares about you. Tell that person you're feeling rough.
Yeah.
Because you'll be amazed how they will help you.
I'm so lucky that, like, it was just the other night, like, kind of late at night, and I just started had a massive offload on my wife.
I'm going to take that out. Sorry.
No, leave it in, because it's funny. It's funny. But, like, I just started telling wife a little bit about what's going on in my head, and she's just it's okay. Like, I love you and I care about you, and we don't see you the way you see yourself. And I genuinely felt loads better afterwards just by telling someone who loves me, like, unconditionally, that they want me here. You know, we need you, we care about you, and, like, we don't need you to do anything. We just want you here.
Yeah. It's so true, Nick. So true, you know?
It's true.
I wish I'd opened up a bit more to my partner, or I wish I spoke to my dad. You know, me and my dad have been so close, so close, and I couldn't talk to him, you know? So, you know, that's definitely some advice. And Andy's Man Club, if you're in Southend, come and say hello on a Monday night. That definitely helps, you know? And hopefully we can get other groups open, you know. I'm back at work, so, you know, I've had a good recovery. I've started work this week, but I do 4 days a week, so I have Mondays off.
Cool.
So I can do Andy's Man Club. So I'm kind of setting out to either get guys to take over Southend and run Southend, and I'm going to go and open Billericay or Chelmsford or Colchester or wherever, or I'm happy to help other people open up their own groups in Billericay, Chelmsford, wherever. You know, I want Essex to, you know, rival the guys up north, you know?
It deserves it too, you know? Like, it's you know, I've been around Essex most of my adult life, really, and it's
it's very interesting, the dynamic of men.
It's a throwback of London,
it
though,
is,
isn't it?
And so I feel it, I really do feel it's needed.
Mentality,
but it's needed.
It's like, no, we're geese.
Yeah, actually, yeah. It's not that, man.
And
it's
also, the demographics within the different places are quite different.
They
you
are.
You know, if you look
they
at,
are.
Just as an example, Basildon, Billericay and Wickford.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got three very different demographics.
Oh, God,
that
yeah.
Could argue, you could argue, would they'd each need their own group because
yeah. I'd say
the similarities and stuff like that, you know.
I think relatability is really key when you're discussing open things, and I think like having the same triggers as someone, because again, as like I sort of just said, is like with like that they are quite class. They differentiate in terms of sort of jobs and people there.
Class is important
because it can be a trigger for. And also, like a quite harsh stimulant to be aggressive.
Or
like, well, it's all right for you because you've got fucking loads of money in the bank. It's like,
actually,
the reality is, but it causes different problems.
Yeah.
So that's not something to rile against. It's something to actually find a common ground with. But it's going to mean that if you're in Basildon and you're part of a part there, and you're in Wickford, and they do have similar jobs and similar houses and similar children and wives, and go to the same schools. Some might be, you know, comprehensives, and some might not be, and what have you. And it's that needs to be addressed, I think.
You've also hit on something there. Is if you know if they know someone goes to a group in Wickford, but their kids go to the same school, they might want to go to Basildon.
That's right.
Because they don't want to go to the Wickford one. And I know that there's a couple of my mates that are not coming to Monday's Man Club in Southend because I'm there and a couple of mates are helping me, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a shame, but I understand that, you know?
Well, it just gives scope for potentially more groups and people to go and use them as they feel comfortable, and that is one of the most important things, isn't it? But having that ability to do it, and you're providing a venue, you're providing a space where people can speak freely and openly.
I have a few links, especially in Chelmsford.
Yeah,
nice. Yeah.
Like my friend does Mates in Chelmsford. It's a Facebook group, and they do like walks. Like every Sunday, and they go and talk. And I know someone else who does one, like in Thundersley area, who does. They do walks as well.
And that's another great thing about Andy's Man Club. They're not kind of out there saying we're the only one.
Yeah,
no,
they want to work with everyone, because what works on a Monday night for one guy may not work for them. But if there's a walk on a Tuesday, it might work for him better, you know? So, and you said it right at the start, you know, the mental health kind of world or family is actually quite small, and we kind of all know each other. And I'm certainly getting to know people, but I want to work with other people, you know? We're helping out the guys run Free Official. They're running a football tournament in a couple of weeks. My son has put his mates together, and are playing as Andy's Man Club FC in a couple of weeks.
That's wicked, Jeff.
Yeah, mates, you know, have got a football
and there's kind of mental health mates that have just started in Leon C. There's lots of things that we should all welcome and all help out, you know.
Because
it all helps, you know.
And
if anyone listening to this wants to get involved with Andy's Man Club, they can contact you guys. Or contact info@andysmanclub, and the guys are fantastic at head office, and they'll help him out. I need to get you two there. I need to get you guys
contact
there.
I'll be down there. You can contact.
I'll be there.
What's that? What's the word? I don't even know. Fucking.
Well, we'll stick it
for fucking 2 years.
I've only been on the show for the best part of a year. So do me a favour.
On the socials. Hey, on the socials.
On the socials.
Yeah, we'll push it on there.
I check the socials all the time.
This is it.
Darren,
we'll be there, mate.
100%.
I'd love to have you there, guys. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we'll go. We'll get down there and see it, and we'll see it for ourselves, and we'll talk about it. I think that's the best way. It's been a lovely conversation.
You can go on my scooter.
I mean, I could just drive. It'd be all right.
No, we could go on my scooter.
All right, we're going on your scooter.
Get on the scooter. Right. Excellent.
Yeah. I'll play
guys,
a ukulele on the back.
Thank you so much for having me tonight. I've really, really enjoyed myself.
Good, mate. Thank you.
I've still got half of notepad that I haven't spoken about.
Amazing. You really, like, it's been quite nice. Like, from my point of view, like, from a purely selfish point of view, like, just being able to have those really open conversation about difficult things.
Yeah.
It's been really good for me.
Mm, yeah, it's lovely, mate. We'll have to have a catch up on a part two at some point soon.
Yeah.
But we will see you. We will see you at Andy's Man's Club. We'll get down there, 100%.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
Been lucky.
Good night. Thank you, mate.
See you later.
Ta-da, brother. Bye, mate.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.